This is ACS Voices, the diversity podcast from the American Chemical Society. I'm your host, Dr. Ben Fiore Walker, manager of the Department of Diversity Programs.
I'm here with Paula Christopher. Paula, we are for once actually in 1016 Studios.
Yes.
Instead of being on location all over the country. But Paula, so tell us your story.
My story. So what would you like to hear? Where do I start?
Well, what brought you to ACS?
ACS?
Do you have a science background?
Well, actually, I don't have a science background. In college, I majored in psychology. Mm-hmm. I came to ACS around 1998, somewhere like that, as a temp. Came to ACS as a temp, and I worked in the administration office at that time, which we don't have anymore. and I was hired in 1999 permanently in the office of then Dr. David Daniels, who was the head of the administrative portion of ACS.
Okay. And so you came as a temp, so there must mm-hmm. been something about it that had you stay.
I got hired.
You got hired?
I got hired.
It gave me a job. That's good.
Yeah, I was, I had just finished working actually for a church. I was, actually for my church that I was attending, I was the administrative assistant to two pastors, at my church. And it was time for me to branch out and look for something else as a means of support for myself. That was a great experience, and so it was time for me to move on. And I joined a temporary agency, and they sent me out to ACS, and I came. And my stay, I think at first it was supposed to be kind of temporary, as far as not being like a year-long assignment, mm-hmm. but it ended up being a year-long thing. It was a little over a year. And then they actually hired me in April of 1999.
All right. Been here for a long time.
Yeah.
And now you are on staff of the Department of Diversity mm-hmm. Programs. And mm-hmm. I personally am very happy to have you on staff.
Oh, thank you.
You get a lot of institutional history and memory. Mm-hmm. So what we deal with diversity. Diversity in science, diversity in the country. Mm-hmm. So what's your take on diversity in science?
Well, I guess I would say I've been in the department now for probably 18, going on 19 years. It started off as minority affairs. So I came here, like I said, I don't have a scientific background, but I did like the idea of working with underrepresented groups. Mm-hmm. And I did develop a love for the work of diversity. And I would say in science, there's much more work that needs to be done, although I believe it's almost like a buzzword that we hear about diversity in STEM, diversity in science. I don't still feel like it's addressed as properly as it should. I feel like there are a lot of inequalities that need to be addressed so that everybody can have the same opportunities. A lot of underrepresented communities are still experiencing a lot of isolation mm-hmm. in their choices of schools to go to because that school has what they want and what they offer what the students want, but they may be like sometimes the only one of their specific ethnic culture. Mm-hmm. And so even though the school has what they want, I want to go here, I'm suffering from lack of really recreational or social outlet with
community.
People of my community, a sense of community, because anytime you're like a one and only, you've got to come in and try to navigate the landscape of what you become a part of. You want the institutional knowledge there because you want to be good at what you do, but at the same time you do need that sense of community to have balance.
Okay, so when you talk about inequalities in science, is that the access to the coursework, or is it the access to higher education in general? What do you think creates that inequality? Also, is that specific to the sciences?
Okay. First part, whether it's access or to the course itself or to the higher levels of education. I believe it's both sometimes, mm-hmm. because it can be a financial situation. It can be that the person or individual or individuals are not exposed to a certain level. And I think that goes back to, we talk about outreaching further back mm-hmm. in the educational system, back K through 12, because sometimes by the time they get to high school, kids get to high school, they don't know that there are certain schools. They haven't had the outreach, you know, that people can tell them more about than just of, if you're Hispanic, just about Hispanic serving institutions, or if you're African American, sometimes you haven't heard beyond the HBCUs, mm-hmm. you know, and you need to be exposed to those things in order to grasp those opportunities. And then whether they have access to the schools, like I said, it can be financial and it can be because they just don't have the knowledge of it. And the other part, if you're not prepared for certain experiences, you don't take them. I feel like there are a lot of missed opportunities because students aren't prepared for being in an environment where they're not in a majority type situation. Mm-hmm. I think that has a lot to do with it. I think about for myself, one advantage I think I had growing up, and I really attribute this to my mother, she always taught me to love people. She always taught me to work with people, get along with people, have respect for people, but also know that myself as an African American woman, I might have to do things a little differently. And I might have to do a little more sometimes, which was for her, she was 80 years old or something at the time, which was a truth for her because she had come through an era where she faced a lot of racism and inequality. So she wanted to prepare me the best way she could. So she would actually, I would see the demonstration of her different relationships, and there were people from different ethnic groups that she was friends with. And I saw there not only her relationship with them, but I saw their give back to her. I saw how they interrelated. And she was, a lot of times my mother was involved in education. She was involved in social work. So she worked with people on different levels most of her life. And so I think that example helped me that when I went out to transverse life or what have you, I wasn't as stigmatized as some people are. Mm-hmm. I wasn't as, I sometimes would go into different venues not feeling so uncomfortable, other than I just don't know the people. It wasn't mm-hmm. because I was African American. They may have been Caucasian or Indian or what have you, African, whatever. That wasn't my barrier. My barrier was just, this is new. You know, mm-hmm. I got to get to know this. And I was always excited about getting to know people. And I don't know that a lot of people, not just ethnic groups. I don't know that people have that experience a lot of times, you know, to be able to grow up. Now, I grew up around African Americans. I was almost fluent in Spanish, so that was a different combination there. Albeit I didn't have that many people that were Hispanic to, you know, speak the language with, mm-hmm. you know. Still, those tidbits that my mom told me and demonstrated helped me the most. Because she could have come from a whole nother direction if she was embittered or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you touched on so many issues. About mm-hmm. So you have the sense of community.
Yes.
So in higher education, you oftentimes in underrepresented groups, you have a mm-hmm. decreasing community of mm-hmm. those groups across the higher education spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so you also touched upon the idea or how your mother, through her community and her diversity of engagements, mm-hmm. instilled that into you so that when you got into a place, you didn't feel some of the stereotype threat or the, I don't belong here. You just went in and said, oh, this is a new situation. I can navigate that.
Yeah.
And that goes back to, seems to me a little bit what you said before about putting it in the pathway. And on the first podcast, Tom talked about the pathway in science mm-hmm. and how getting people on that pathway is putting it on their radar, putting the idea of science and that they can do science, even though they don't see many people out there mm-hmm. in their immediate circle that are doing the science. And those people may be out there, but they're
right
further out. But they can do it. And that they should give it a try and give it a try. So kind of through that story of how your mom mm-hmm. raised you, you kind of, all that's in there.
Yeah.
And that's basically what kind of the work that we're trying to do is get the word out and put science on the radar of people.
Right. So it's not so, I guess I don't look at it as an impossibility. You know,
it's a challenge.
It's a challenge.
Opportunity.
Let's call it an opportunity. Yeah. But it's also a challenge because I have to test what's in me also.
Mm-hmm.
And for the students that are out there in science, even when I go to national meetings or we go to our sister organizations, I will tell you, when I first started traveling to these various meetings, I feel a little inept because I didn't have a science background.
Mm.
But what I found was that because I kind of knew how to encourage people, that was the most important thing.
Right.
And so when I think about pathways to STEM, the science itself, that's what they love. So that's what should be presented to them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not so much a focus on their ethnic group. If everybody could receive the same opportunities, they could do the same work. And not the same, I want to say it not to minimize anybody's research, but because they bring a different ideal, they bring a different experience, they bring a different view of situations and circumstances around the research that they're doing to help solve the nation's problems, the world's problems. You have to have those different viewpoints. And when they're limited, or the individuals that hold these gifts, when they're held back, you're missing it.
Mm-hmm.
You're missing it. You're missing it. You're choosing from a pool where we all think the same, we all have had similar experiences, yet we're going to solve the world's problems. No, let's throw someone that's international in, and I don't mean throw them in in a negative sense, but I mean let them have an opportunity to be at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Bring those people, those Native Americans and the First Americans, Native Americans, bring in Hispanic, the Latino and Latinas, bring them in because they have those different experiences. And then it seems like an age-old rivalry with African American their relationship in America, I'll speak on, and in some other nations too, but especially America, it seems to be an age-old confrontation. But let's let those barriers go. Let's let the judgments, I think there's been disclaimers, misnomers about the educational level of a person that's African-American, because I've seen it more there than I have
mm-hmm.
with other ethnic cultures. I've seen them, that there's been science done to examine the thinking processes or the brain function of African-American as compared to somebody else. Let's not do that. Let's just put the work in. Let's just give everybody the same opportunity and see what comes up from it. What will it hurt?
Mm-hmm. So is that your prescription for solving the country's disparities in general or in science? I mean, what can an organization like ACS do in order to tackle that big problem?
Of what's going on in our nation?
Well, I mean...
Or just in science?
What kind of science is a microcosm of what goes on in our nature?
Right,
in our nation,
right?
But what are some strategies that organizations such as ACS or any professional society or group do to tackle some of these problems in disparity in not only in the mm-hmm. sciences but kind of in general?
Yeah, I think the bottom line goes back to human dignity and respect
mm-hmm.
for each person. It doesn't matter what discipline, what genre you're in, science, arts, what have you, it doesn't matter. It goes back to common decency, which I think is a fabric that's in our society, that's been here for years, but has been undermined by the polished things, the shiny things, the I have something better than you have, I got more than you have, or I got this and you didn't get it. We've been like working under such a divisive system, and it's not a well, it was written at one time. It was a written divisive system, but I think we've just adopted attitudes in our nation that have just been so divisive because we've been doing it for generations and generations and generations. And now we come to this head where it's really getting a little crazy. And the bottom line, when I look at it all the turmoil, all the challenges, all the problem is a basic lack of respect and dignity for all people, for human life, civility. What happened to civility? Mm-hmm. What happened to it? In our quest to become the richest nation in the world, in our quest to become the best, have we forgotten that we all came from somewhere? This land is not originally any of ours per se, maybe the Native Americans, but
even migratory patterns there.
It's still everybody has to come from somewhere. Mm-hmm. Everybody historically, even if it's generations, even if you've been living here for generations, generations before you came from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So we're all like a nice, I think what some of the older people say, a mishmash. Mm-hmm. Why can't we get along? And mm-hmm. I think that was Rodney King's statement, you know, why can't we all get along? Yeah. Now, I'm not saying he was the greatest representative. Because there was a lot going on there, but the injustice in our nation is what hurts us. And like you said, science being a part of that, we lose. If we don't represent it in our community of STEM, of science, at least have something going there. But the larger issues, I feel like maybe our organization has to speak to those issues in some manner, because it is going to affect the sciences. Whatever goes on here, whether it be immigration, whether it be unjust policies, whether it be people being shot in the streets unjustly, treated unjustly, women being targeted with harassment, or men being targeted with mm-hmm. harassment for that matter, we can't be a bubble.
Right.
We can't be a bubble. So I feel in some way, form, or fashion, ACS can represent a working module of respect and dignity for all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be work.
Yeah. Well, when people are disenfranchised, mm-hmm. it's very hard to then get them engaged in the pursuit of something. Something mm-hmm. also especially as varied and sometimes difficult as science.
Right.
And I mean, I like the idea when you're talking about the differences of us and the mishmash, as the older folk would say.
Yeah.
I've also heard it called, you know, when it's an American melting pot.
Right.
And it's like, exactly. Well, yeah, I was like, well, we're not really a melting pot because we're not homogenous.
Right.
Maybe a stew, but people are like, well, I don't know, stew.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely like the American gumbo.
Yeah.
With a lot of different flavors, a lot of different parts, but they all retain their unique tastes and it adds to the entire flavor. So
yeah, I feel that's what made America America. We haven't got everything right, but I felt when we honored people from wherever they're from, everybody has a story. Everybody who has come here has tried to escape some kind of persecution. And I'm not talking about criminals.
I'm not talking about criminals.
Right. But I'm talking about people that genuinely had to do fight or flight, or maybe death
mm-hmm.
or flight, to come to a place where they felt like they had hope. And I feel like even in our science community, if people, various individuals from various ethnic groups, domestically or internationally, globally, feel like, I just love science. I just love what I do, and I want to get more. Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't we be the premier place to come? Why shouldn't the United States, the American Chemical Society, be the premier place? Not because we're large or not because of our name, but because of how we conduct business
mm-hmm.
on a day-to-day basis, internally and externally. Why couldn't it be because they give everybody opportunities to do their work, to do what they love?
Yeah. Wow. That I agree 100%. 100%. I mean, that would be such a great change mm-hmm. in that everyone feels that dignity, that respect, that support, the ability to say, I can do anything.
And get their science done.
And get
solve these problems that we need
solved. Yeah, I'm not a, I'm not an African-American scientist. I'm a scientist who happens to be African-American or woman or gay or lesbian or whatever. And that would be a great lens to put on it.
Yeah, and I don't feel like it's a dream. I feel like it can really happen if we all, and I'm saying all of us, because we all have our biases and we all have our prejudices, but can we make adjustments for the sake of humanity?
Right.
You know, if you really have a common cause, usually in common causes, you sacrifice something. What do you sacrifice? My own opinion. And not saying your opinion is not important, but I'm saying I'm not so hot on my own opinion that I can't work with you on a project to get something done.
Sure.
You know, and I think that's the reality of it. If this is really something we have in common, that we have a love for, let the unity start there.
Mm-hmm.
Let it start with what we love, and then maybe I'll be able to adjust myself, and maybe we can really become friends, or we can really become colleagues. I mean, colleagues without a fence between them, colleagues without a barrier, colleagues that I'm not going to go, when I take my break, I'm talking badly about them. But I mean, actually, for the love of what we do, can I forget about everything else for right now? Because if we solve this problem, the whole world is going to be better, because that's what we really want, the whole world.
Yeah.
And this whole world includes a lot of different kinds of people. So we need to really kind of think about that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So switching gears a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah. You talked about the world.
Yes.
You talked about the global aspect of science and of the world in general, and how we all can, you know, think of a global mindset, put things together and get some things done. You have some worldly experience. You were in the military, correct?
Yes, I was.
Served our country well. Tell us a little bit about that aspect of your life. This is pre-ACS.
I thought we were talking just about ACS.
No, okay. It's never just about ACS.
Okay, yes. I was in the United States Army for 7 years. My specialty was in communications, of all things. Was in communications. I was stationed in various places. I did a lot of training in Arizona. I was stationed in Georgia, Fort Gordon, Georgia. Shout out. I was in Arizona for a while. I served in Korea, and then I came back and served at the Pentagon. And I will tell you, there's no nation like America. The United States of America. I served in Korea, South Korea, South Korea. I was at a communication station that I think we had 2.8 seconds. If North Korea or any other, well, I'll say if North Korea wanted to come over at that time and just destroy us in 2.8 seconds, we would have been gone, because that's how close we were. And so living with that, it's a different mindset of how you live, how you appreciate life, the work that you do. Many times we were on alert where we had to be in our uniforms and have our weapons 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
I had a top secret clearance at that time, so there were a lot of things that happened that, you know, I couldn't discuss. I haven't discussed with anybody.
Well, I wouldn't discuss them here.
And I will not discuss them here.
Okay.
Some of them, those that I remember. And because it's been a while, but it was one of the greatest experiences of my life for me. I found that either the military would either make you or break you. And I went in at the time when women were joining forces with men. So we were in our platoons and everything together. We, you know, did everything together. But anyway, so we worked together. So that was it was an opportunity. It showed me what I was made of. I was the only child for many years. And some things I hadn't faced, I wasn't what you would call real street savvy. I think I was more on the nerdy end of things.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up in school and everything, I liked the arts. I liked music. I liked drama. I liked history. I liked Spanish. And actually, I did like science. I didn't know I could become a chemist at that time, but I did like science. And another specialty, I liked photography.
Hmm.
I like the aspect of taking the pictures and developing and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the military, it really gave me a strength, because you had to learn how to take care of yourself, but not that. You had to learn to be a partner to others. And for an only child, because everybody goes home when you finish playing with them, you're like, there's nobody else, so you have a tendency to become a little self-absorbed. But I learned in the military a lot of teamwork and a lot about caring for other people, looking out for others, making sure that when you came across the line, somebody else came across the line. And even though I was in it more of what we would call a peacetime, we still had exercises and things of that nature that we had to look out for one another. And one experience I had, I was a platoon leader. I was one of four, and I had a squad full of men, males. Half were African-American, half were Hispanic. The African-American guys would give me a hard time, like, you're not going to be the boss of us. And the Hispanic guys were always throwing kisses. It was just really a wild situation. Yeah, it was wild. It was wild. And it's just some things that women go through, you know. And, you know, it was kind of hard. But I had to just be like, okay, I'm in charge of the squad. You're going to do what's right, or you're going to drop and give me 20. Or you're going to drop and give me 25. Because I have been given that authority.
it sounds like the neighborhood when I was growing up. I mean, all the women had the power.
Yeah, and, I mean, it was pretty amazing. And we had a female platoon leader, and that was so awesome. But she was fair. She never, you know, distinguished between the male and female squad leaders. But at one point, I just felt like, I can't do this anymore. And I went to my drill sergeant and I said, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to be one of the regular rank and file. He was like, not going to do it.
Oh.
He said, I have to deal with, I think it was like 48 or 50 personalities. He said, every day I leave my wife and children and I come here and I do what I have to do when I come here. He said, so I'm not going to let you quit. You have 10 people and you're going to get them in shape and you're going to deal with each of those personalities. So that was another life lesson. You know, sometimes you feel like quitting. Sometimes these kids don't want to go through what they're going through. Sometimes when they're at these different facilities, it can be where they're the one and onlys, and the challenges that they face there, they're like, I don't want to do this. You're writing home like, Mom, I'm coming home, you know, or you want to transfer to a school that's more comfortable for you, but it may not be the best for you. And so that was a lesson I learned there. I got to go ahead and do this because evidently he saw there was a certain quality in me that I didn't see, which is how I try to encourage the students that I see.
Yeah,
I try to do that same thing. Sometimes you see something in them and it's like they don't even recognize really how great it is to have that opportunity. And then, like, go as far as you want to go. Don't let there be a limit. And when it gets hard, send me an email. When it gets hard, give me a call at the office, you know, or whatever, to be available. Because in that situation, I couldn't go home. I belonged to the U.S. government, you know. And when he said, put those stripes back on your arm, I had to do it.
Yeah.
But in having the option not to fail, having the option not to concede or abdicate what I did have, I was able to go forward. And so these kids, those are the things I feel like I can offer. Don't abdicate. Because your breakthrough could cause somebody else to be able to come through. If you go through it, you can open the door for somebody else. Right. And when somebody else needs help, you can be a coach or a mentor. And one gets through, two, three, you know, and then before you know it, over a succession of time, people have these great opportunities, which they might not have had if you didn't go through what you had to go through. Right. So that taught me that the hard work, the stick-to-itiveness. Everybody doesn't think like you, Paula Christopher, you know, and to learn to get along with people, to learn them. That's a lot. Just learning people, period. Not based on their exterior, but learn the people. Learn. Find those points of agreement. Find those points where you can work together. And it becomes different. Find those places of interest. And sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes people don't want to be bothered. I was Harrison at that time when I was in the military. And there was another Harrison in my platoon. He was a 6'2" Caucasian, blonde, blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy whose last name was Harrison. And we got along fabulously. We told everybody we were brothers and sisters. And people would just look at us so crazy. And if somebody said something or did something, he was like, hey, leave my sister alone. And they look at him and be like, what? He said, yeah, that's yeah, my
wrap
sister.
Wrap your mind around that.
Yeah, wrap your mind around that. Yeah. So, you know, I think diversity has always been a link or a part of my mm-hmm. life. I think it's always been a spirit of diversity in my life to appreciate people, like I said, from my mom. Then I get in the military. It's like the same thing. And it's what's real, not funny, like, ha-ha, but our platoon was made up of all different ethnic groups, mm-hmm. which was, in that time, a little strange, mm-hmm. you know, but learning to get along with different people from the South, from the North, from the East and the West.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, well, you had to all come together yeah. in order to keep safe.
Yes.
And work as a unit and yes. work as one group in case something bad happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to go back to something you said that ties into what you were talking about earlier and how the kind of the advice that you gave students is, you know, if when they feel like they want to give up, give you a call, you know,
yeah.
and talk about it and just stay with it.
Yeah.
Because you saw that when you were in the military, when your drill sergeant wouldn't let you quit.
But
people, mm-hmm. a lot of times students in school, like, oh, this is hard. You know, I'm doing chemistry, I'm doing biology or whatever. You always have that course mm-hmm. that is not in your wheelhouse and it's hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're like, ah, I can't do this. Just eyes on the prize, keep mm-hmm. going and keep pushing, because you going through and you making it, you know, going on, makes it a little easier for the person behind you. Mm-hmm. And what you were saying, what I was visualizing as you were talking, is you're building that community.
Yeah.
Everyone, to get that community in science or in whatever,
mm-hmm.
you need people to do it.
You need a trailblazer.
You need a trailblazer, and that trailblazer, and maybe that even that trailblazer isn't the first. Right. Maybe that trailblazer is just, it's been a long time between. So that trailblazer kind of, the path is overgrown a little bit. You got to kind of clean it out a little bit.
Yes.
And so getting people on that path so that it just tramples down that path and makes it wider and wider, and pretty soon it's a highway going
mm-hmm.
through.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, people going, so everyone has that agency. Everyone
yes.
has that little bit of saying, well, I'm going to go, I'm going to do it because I love what I do. I love the science. Mm-hmm. I love the thinking. I love the whatever it is. But also, I want to be that role model for others to say they can do it too.
Yes.
And they can follow their passion. They can follow their you know, their heart. And it's not always going to be a smooth
ride.
It's not always going to be ups and downs, but nothing in life is, right?
Yeah, and sometimes when you're going through those studies and things, you know, sometimes you're not realizing in some communities you represent all.
Yeah.
Some communities, it's just you, but some communities, especially the underrepresented, you represent a majority. And I think that's sometimes what students forget, and that might be a push to help them go forward, and the dynamics is different, and not to take anything away from any other culture or ethnic group, but I'm just saying from observation, the underrepresented communities in science or in our nation or in our world, every time you make a move, you represent many.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that individuals should gather strength from that.
It also be tiring. You know,
yeah.
when people say, well, as an African American woman,
mm-hmm.
what do you think about? You know, it's like, okay, I can speak for one.
And I think you have to,
versus the whole. Yeah.
I think you have to make that clear, but still have the knowledge that when people look at you, they're thinking every African American woman mm-hmm. or every African American male or every Hispanic woman or, you know, without getting into some of the bigotry of it, is that everybody wants that fair chance to just be seen for them.
Mm-hmm.
But also because of the dynamics of our society and our world, you do, in a sense, represent a majority. And I think it's more strengthening than it is
mm-hmm.
non-strengthening. I think it's more, let me go and represent even as me, myself, and I. But maybe that will change somebody's perspective
of the whole
community.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. And I don't think that's a negative thing. I think people need to see more of those units of one as a representation of many to change some of the mindsets,
mm-hmm.
to change some of the preconceived notions, if you will, that people have about certain groups. Like every Hispanic person is not woman is not named Maria, you know. Every African American guy is not Jay-Z. I'm just throwing things out there sometimes that people think in a weird way or whatever. Or every Native American is not secretly has a feather in his pocket somewhere, or mm-hmm. you know what I mean? These things yeah. that sound silly, sound foolish, but people still have these concepts. And it's hindering when it comes to having them come into your university, having them come into your lab, having them come into your classroom, and with those preconceived notions, how can you be your best self as a professor, as a teacher, if it's K through 12, or, you know, how can you give your best to them, and you say you're an educator, if you still hold on to some things that are not true?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a self-examination that everybody needs to take.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, if you look at the whole, if I love education, then I'm going to make sure everybody in my class is educated.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure everybody has it. But I
to
do,
the same level.
To the same
to,
level.
You know, to the best of their ability.
Yeah,
to best,
right,
you
exactly.
know, yeah, not giving up on someone's like, yeah. oh, I'm a math teacher. I'm not going to teach mm-hmm. math to the girls, because we all know
yeah.
about girls and math.
Yes.
Like, you know, those type of old
yes, exactly.
stereotypes are... Yeah,
mm-hmm. and some
yeah.
of those things have carried on through generations.
Yeah.
And the part about encouraging the students, I give them my cards. I tell them to call me and let me know what's going on. And not just when something's not going well, but when you're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear your progress. Usually touch points when I go to some of our meetings. You know, the last time we talked, you were here. What are you doing now? Oh, I've gone out and I've done this and I'm blah, blah, blah. And I presented my research there. And it's just good to hear, but also to see on their faces that somebody remembered,
mm-hmm.
somebody cared, somebody asked about it. Do I retain everything they tell me? I probably don't retain everything. There's so many people I meet, but I can surely, when I see them, say, I remember. Because usually seeing them triggers it for
yeah.
me. But then sometimes I'll get an email, say I'm doing well, I'm doing this, I'm progressing here, or they'll be on LinkedIn or
mm-hmm.
something like that, so you can see the progress. So I think that's important, because they need balance.
Yeah.
And that's any student. It's not
yeah.
just from the underrepresented, but everybody needs balance. I think this is where we go off, because we're not living as balanced of a life as we should. And that's even in our educational arenas. The students, you know, having support, having not just when your class gets hard, but do you have an outlet when you need to take a break?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an outlet where you feel comfortable? Do you have somewhere where you can really let your hair down and be yourself and not feel like you're going to be judged? And I don't mean wild activities or unlawful activities, but just being, because really when you're in school, you're a kid. You're still a kid, basically.
Yeah.
You know, so you need the balance,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Well, Paula, I appreciate you coming in and talking to us.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was a great conversation, and I think you had a lot of great advice for the students and a lot of things that people can take some solace in and take some information out of and say, yeah, okay, I'm going to do what Paula says. I'm going to stick to itiveness. I'm going to keep it going. But I really appreciate it. And,
thank you, Ben.
Yep. You have been listening to ACS Voices, the diversity podcast produced by the American Chemical Society and 1016 Studios in Washington, D.C.